8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
KnotFest.com presents Talk to Me. With over 300 interviews under his belt and 6 years running, your host Joshua Toomey interviews metal and rock's heaviest hitters. Follow the show at Talk to Me Talk. Here's your host, Joshua Toomey.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Talk to Me, where the guest this week is Mike Haranica of The Devil Wears Prada. They have a new album out called Z2. Make sure and go check that out on Solid State Records. And they also have an upcoming tour with We Came as Romans, Dayseeker, and Hollow Front starting November 29th in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, all the way through November 7th in Detroit, Michigan. This was a great interview with Mike. If you want to check out the video of it, to make sure to head over to KnotFest.com, become a VIP, and you will be able to check out not only the interview with Mike, but also my full interviews on Throwback Throwdown with Toomey, my KnotFest Twitch show with such guests as Sonny from POD, Dino Cazares of Fear Factory, Heidi Shepherd of Butcher Babies, recently added Christian Machado of Lions at the Gate, formerly of El Nino. That was such a fun interview. And if you were listening to this on post day, make sure to come and hang out with me on Twitch tonight, twitch.tv/KnotFestOfficial, where we will be celebrating 30 years of the Black Album with Michael Alago, former Elektra A&R, who signed Metallica to the major label. And we will also have a quick interview with SJ from We Are Pigs, one of my favorite up-and-coming bands, and they recently did a song with Morgan Lander of Kitty entitled Moot. Make sure and go check that out. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's also my birthday today, so come hang out with me on Twitch. Wish me a happy birthday, and we'll have a lot of fun over there. And back to the guest at hand, Mike and I talk about the full-length album The Act that came out in 2019, touring before the pandemic, living through the situation, file sharing these tunes for Z2 and his process of going through them and writing lyrics, the transition of his voice from the early days to where it is now, one of my favorite screams in metal. We did discuss about how trendy the band was when they first started out. They did a fantastic cover of Still Fly back in the day, a lot of fun, and how they almost did Party Like a Rockstar, signing to Rise Records right out of high school. We end with some hockey talk and how the goalie is the drummer of the band. And so make sure you guys check them out on their upcoming tour with We Came as Romans, Dayseeker, and Hollow Front. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to the podcast. Head over to KnotFest.com, become a VIP. Come hang out with me tonight, 5 p.m. Eastern. Throwback Throwdown with Toomey on twitch.tv/KnotFestOfficial. And without any more of my ramblings, let's get into Forlorn off of Z2. Let's talk to Mike, and then I will talk to you guys momentarily.
We're not that.
right, guys, let's welcome Mike from The Devil Wears Prada to the Talk To Me podcast here on knotfest.com. Mike, how you doing, man?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Awesome, man. It's funny, every interview I went to listen to get the pronunciation of your last name, and no one says it. They all just say Mike from The Devil Wears Prada. So hit me with that last name.
It's Horanica, but yeah, often avoided.
Yeah, actually, that's not too bad. Is, you know, once you know it, but yeah, it's what's the origin of that name?
Mostly Czech Slovak, something like that.
So is it just like chopped in half or something like that when they came over, or anything like that?
I don't know. I don't know my ancestry super well. I know that in Czech it means border. Okay. So I can say that much, but yeah, not a whole lot to report past that.
All right. Well, I had to ask. Before we get into Z2, I want to talk a little about the act and just the album itself, man. I saw, you know, I heard in a few interviews that you were that the fans were upset with the album not being heavy enough and all this other stuff. But man, that is a start to finish absolute masterpiece of an album. Like, that in a day and age where music is disposable and we're releasing singles at a time, I mean, that is a start to finish. You have to listen to the entire album all at once, man. It's great.
I really appreciate that. I am a fan of front to back, more than just singles or hits and whatnot. So we put everything we had into it, for sure.
Did you guys get to actually tour the album? I mean, where were you when the shutdown started? Because I know a lot of bands, you know, like Killswitch Engage, two dates into a tour had to go home. You know, where were you guys?
We were able to get out and do our headline tour towards the autumn of 2019. We had just picked up. We were then able to play Europe, which was awesome, with our friends Stray from the Path. And then we started a tour with We Came as Romans that got shut down about 8 days in. So Wow. We had a lot more past that planned.
Right.
Even up to this point now, this year, 2021. So, you know, a lot of bands got bent over. We were one of them. Some worse, some better than others. But, what can you do?
Were you guys just sitting on boxes and boxes of merch?
It got shipped back.
Okay.
It got shipped back, and we're able to kind of, sort of negotiate with the merch company as far as, hey, don't bill us for this, because obviously we're not selling it right now. So, yeah, all sorts of logistics. You know, when you think about everyone that's had to go through this, and even you know, not just the musicians, but even like bus companies, and then of course venues and bartenders, and it's been something. Hopefully touring resumes in a few months. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, it looks like everything's kind of opening up. I mean, these festivals are being announced. I mean, Hellfest in Europe, man, looks insane. It's like 7 days, 350 bands. I'm just like, are you guys on that? I didn't even notice. Like, how did you get, and if you're not, how did you get left off?
that's a good question. Hellfest is pretty awesome. We've played it once, but I've kind of said that I'll know that things are back to normal once I'm actually on a stage, and I'm not going to take it for granted until I am on that stage,
right?
No matter what gets announced and whatnot. So I mean, that's just even stateside, you know. Things look pretty messy as far as international travel. So we'll see how that unrolls or unpacks.
So this is basically the longest period of your adult life, probably, that you haven't been on stage. Is that correct?
That is correct.
How have you handled that? Because, I mean, obviously you were in the, you know, Devil Wears Prada at an early age. I mean, you're basically your entire life, you know, you've been a front man of a band, and to kind of just have it all stop, I mean, that's got to be tough on anybody.
For sure. I mean, pandemic or no, I certainly have my certain level of, you know, anxiety and sort of mental health struggles.
Right.
Like anyone, you know, this throws everything off. As I've gotten older, I've come to appreciate being home more. So I will say that, you know, it's not something where I like felt super, super claustrophobic. I think the biggest thing for me to figure out was just that it felt like the world stopped spinning, whether I'm at home or on tour. Like, I like to observe and I like to take in everything around me. And when, you know, what happened in March of 2020 happened, it was a lot to process. And there was certainly a number of weeks there that I couldn't be motivated to do anything. Couldn't read, couldn't write, couldn't play guitar.
Don't
want to do that again. I'll say that.
Was it hard for you? I mean, I know being in bands my whole life, you know, up until, you know, a few years ago or whatnot, I mean, you're always to me from this band or to me from that band, you know, being me and, you know, you're Mike from The Devil Wears Prada. And when you're at home for a year, over a year, how much of your identity is wrapped up into that? And how hard is it to kind of not be Mike from The Devil Wears Prada for a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I miss doing what I'm passionate about, you know. I miss, like, even just outside, you know, the fact that it's my occupation.
Right.
And the fact that, you know, I've had to really squeak by and work part-time and just try to auction things off to get by, you know, when one month is tougher than another. I don't know. But with that said, you know, like I do appreciate a certain level of privacy. I try never to pump my own tires too much or get a big head about what the band's achieved or anything. So in terms of like a sense of pride, I don't think it hit me too hard. I think it's just, I think that I'm rather organized and I like to have control.
Yeah.
And obviously COVID has controlled everything for everyone now for a right. while. And that lack of control is certainly something for that is not easy for me to digest.
I heard you say that you didn't want Z2 to be like the COVID EP, you know, and for everyone to be like, all right, everybody recorded an EP while in COVID. But man, we actually had this on Knotfest, on the Knotfest Twitch first listen a few weeks ago when it came out. My host Hardcore Keem and I listened to Z2 in its entirety, and man, what a banger of an EP it is! And if anybody is upset about the act, you know, go check out Z2. I think you'll be thoroughly impressed with the heaviness of the album.
Yeah, I mean, the fun of writing about zombies is what I call not thinker material. Right. You can just turn your brain off and, you know, put your head through a pane of glass or, you know, it's just sort of just balls to the wall, you know. It's nothing of utmost catharsis or anything such as that. So, yeah, it worked out well, and I think it's about the most perfect thing we could have been doing during our time off and whatnot. And it feels refreshing. It blew us all away, the numbers it's achieved as far as selling vinyl records and the amount of streams it's received. And getting a lot of folks interested in Prada again is so huge and nothing we take for granted. So it's been awesome. It's something we're very grateful for, and it's about time to do it live.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's crazy. I was looking at Spotify and like other than Chemical, the rest of your top listened songs on Spotify were from Z2. It's crazy to have such a catalog that you have that all of those songs jumped up so high so quick.
Yeah. And you know, we worked hard on it. I think it's a good project. I think it's a good EP. But we've really there's been a change of things behind the scenes within the camp in terms of management and whatnot, and things have been going really well with Solid State Records, who's just really worked their asses off to pump this thing up, so as well as the act even as well. So things are feeling really great around here. I think even with the pandemic, you know, screwing everything up, I think we're on the right page in terms of being able to pick things up once we can again.
Well, had it not been for the pandemic, we wouldn't have Z2, would we? So
that's true. Likely wouldn't have been doing this. And like you mentioned, I've said in past interviews that I don't want it to be the COVID EP, but at the same time, the circumstances of COVID and seeing how the world actually handles it.
Right.
It it colored the album, you know, it gave it its certain level of, I don't know, dimensions or characteristics. So no, I don't think we would have made Z2 if it wasn't for the pandemic.
When you first started getting, I'm assuming that this was all done through file sharing. Did you guys actually get together and play any of this together before you recorded it? Or were you just getting demos basically in your Dropbox?
Yeah, the latter. Even for the most part, anyway, we've become, the band's always been pretty spread out for the last 10 years-ish, 10, 12 years. We're pretty used to it. We're pretty used to, you know, sending MP3s back and forth. But with this, actually, you know, instrumentally, it's really just John and Kyle, and they were actually living together in John's house at the beginning of the pandemic and through most of the pandemic. So in terms of the instrumentals, you know, it was hardly even file sharing. I think it was more so just Kyle going down to John's basement into his studio and hearing demos, or John going up to Kyle's room in his space and hearing riffs and demos. So, and yeah, from there, you know, I get songs sent to me here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I do my thing.
Well, how is it for you when you get like, when you get Forlorn, you know, into your email and you hit play for the first time, you know, you kind of experience it like we all do, you know, hit that, how it hits right away and just a banger of a tune to begin with. So, I mean, for you, when you're like, oh my God, here's some new songs I got to write lyrics and vocal lines to, and you know, that's what you get. I mean, it's gotta be nuts for you.
Yeah. The fellers are good. The dudes writing the instrumentals are insanely talented. I think the world of John, and as a producer and a songwriter, and what a huge piece of the band he is. But yeah, it's I hope I don't take it for granted, and I hope I can recognize with gratitude the how lucky I am to have those guys sending me songs that it's like, oh, like it's ready for the vocal to pop, right. You know, and it's I know that those guys don't take me for granted in what I do in the band either, as far as coming up with like a sort of imagery and, you know, everything that a lyric does and a vocal does. So the chemistry is good. Things work well, whether we're apart or in person. You know, obviously at some point it comes down to actually being in person, actually being recording together, but being apart, working up to it, we all know how one another work, and John's just the sort of mastermind manipulator in the middle, regulating everything.
Now, once you get those files, then how much do you send back and say, hey, I need this 8 times, not 4 times, you know, I want to get this line, or the, you know, I need extra time for this, or are you getting finished product, or are you sending it back saying, hey, I need this part X amount of times more?
John is so good that he's going to know how long he wants the verse to breathe, how things are going to calm down as we go into the bridge, and how the bridge is going to pop coming out of it and whatnot. Like, I think a lot of it, I can't think of a time in recent memory that I had something that I'm like, double or cut this in half. I think John's really good at doing that off the bat. Kyle has a tendency to sometimes let things go double as long. So I think John usually takes that with him, and they work on the tempo together. So a lot of that, I think, is processed and edited even before it gets to me. So, you know, I'm not trying to cook up more than enough or not enough for whatever the song, you know, whatever the vocal can do to serve the song best.
Another thing I heard in a couple of interviews, you were talking about some of your influences, and when you said them, I was like, all right, I get it. You know, like an Ian MacKaye from Fugazi, Minor Threat, you know, like vocally, you have a lot of that in your voice, you know, like a lot of the, even I think you said Jesus Lizard was one, you know, just where you can convey emotion in a scream that's not just, you're not just screaming, like there's a lot of passion and emotion behind it. And when you started naming off some of your influences or some of the bands you were into, I was like, oh, yeah, I can totally see all of that. That's an awesome palette to pull from with those guys.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You know, I've kind of had a habit through most of my life, and I consider myself even more so, I think, a consumer of music than a creator of music and a fan. But I've always had a habit of not liking good singing.
Right.
I like character and uniqueness in a voice. And I think that's one thread that's kind of just stuck with me over the course of my adult life in terms of the music I consume, is that what pops to me and what really grabs me is usually going to be a singer that might not be so by the book,
yeah,
but has a lot of character to his or her voice.
Now, over the time, you've developed a pretty intense scream, and I was listening to early stuff and then listening to later stuff, and I really feel like you've kind of come into your own, you know, and maybe got a capture, you're captured your voice, you know, you've taken control of it, to where, you know, in all of our younger days when we sang in a punk band or screamed, you know, we were just screaming to scream. But I think you've kind of taken it now to where you've harnessed it and you made it your own instrument, man.
I appreciate that. That's really kind of you to say. And thank you. I think that I know that I certainly sound different on, you know, the band's first two records and whatnot, and people ask about it. I try not to read comments, but I know there's speculation right. about I've lost my voice and utter bullshit such as right. that, pardon the language. But I think it's really a matter of comfort. I mean, I used to just kill my voice in the studio, and I think a lot of it was just that I wasn't comfortable and I didn't know how to perform the way I did live. I think that one way you can kind of look at it is like, oh, you need to put yourself more in that mind space. And I don't really think it's that actually. I think it's just learning and performing and getting used to it, to where at one point in my life, you know, if it was like, if out of nowhere I were to perform a song, it would probably be kind of inconsistent based on like adrenaline and whatnot. And it's different now. Like I can, unless, you know, my voice is totally shot, if, you know, I get sick or something or beat it up too much on tour, like I can get into a recording situation and I'm going to be able to be me. So, yeah, it just comes with a certain level of confidence and experience for yeah. sure.
I recently interviewed Josh Todd of Buck Cherry, and the funny thing about that is one of his big influences was also Ian MacKay of Minor Threat. And I jokingly asked, I was like, what do you think the guy from Minor Threat would think about that he influenced, you know, Crazy Bitch? And, you know, I think he would be way more into The Devil Wears Prada than maybe Buck Cherry.
Yeah. He's terrifying. I've had a friend that's actually run into Ian a few times, very strangely and coincidentally, and I still keep up with the Evens, one of his projects. He put out, he had a project he released a year or two ago, also with his wife, but also Joe, I'm pretty sure Joe from Fugazi.
Okay.
Oh my God, I want to say it. I'm thinking of a different name, but yeah, I keep up with him, and I don't think I'd ever want to meet him. I'd be terrified. Start talking politics and just get buried.
I have a friend that interviewed him, and it took, I think they exchanged emails like 10 times before Ian like believed that he was truly a fan and didn't just want him like on his podcast. He was like, all right, I'll do the interview now. You know, I remember, you know, I'm a few years older than you. And so like some of my early shows in the mid 90s were Fugazi shows that were, they always did the $5 no matter what shows. And then I remember they came through one time and the tickets were $5.50. And I remember my punk rock friends being so pissed off that that extra 50 cents was on there. Like, they always said they were going to be $5 no matter what, and now it's $5.50. This is, you know, bullshit. It's, you know, it's so funny.
I'm sure if you approached, you know, early to mid 90s Fugazi and said, let me tell you that about this thing called Ticketmaster in right. 2021, and you're gonna love it,
right? Oh, my goodness, man. You know, my wife and I met while we were working at a t-shirt place that sold CDs, and roughly about 2008, 2009. And when we were talking, you know, as we were getting ready for this, I was like, do you remember how much Devil Wears Prada stuff we sold back then? Like, it was the amount of kids that came in after school and bought, you know, Devil Wears Prada merch. Like, we couldn't keep it on the shelves, man. It's pretty crazy to think back about that time, you know, roughly 2008, 2009 for the band.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'd be lying to say that we weren't trendy or we weren't hopping on trends in terms of the bright t-shirts and
They were all the brightest and the craziest designs.
Oh yeah, and I loved the covering a rap song and whatnot. But you know, as trendy as that is and out of touch as it feels, you know, 12 years later, I know that we always acted in a genuine nature and not out of vanity or greed, no matter how stupid we look on Google Images.
You know, you said you brought up Still Fly in there, and like, that was a CD we had. You know, we had Punk Goes Crunk, I think, or Crunk Goes Punk. That was a CD I was really excited to hear because I loved all those Punk Goes Pop and all of those, you know, Punk Goes Country or whatever. And I was like, all right, Punk Goes Crunk, this is gonna be a lot of fun. And the only song I ended up liking on there was Still Fly. So there you go.
I don't want to say this as being cocky, but you're not the first person to say that.
Right.
What's funny is a friend of mine who he worked at Revolver for a while and whatnot. Him and I were texting probably like a year ago, maybe within the pandemic, about if you go back and listen to some of those songs, how much the N-bomb was thrown around. Right. In these bands. Like, to us, it was really bizarre. I remember when the EP came out and just listening, like, you guys didn't make them like your sound. You just kind of use this as an excuse to be like rap for a minute. Right. Or like go hip hop. And it's like, I don't know. For me, like, the big, like, anytime people are like a rap song with a breakdown, I just think of Throwdown, early 2000s. They did Baby Got Back. Right. And that was like, to anyone that thinks that Still Fly is like the only quote unquote metalcore hip hop type deal, that's what I was listening to in high school. And I think that was by far more innovative than what we did. That whole thing was like, the label came to us and said, do you want to do this? And the whole band was like, absolutely yes, except me. I'm like, that's stupid. No way.
Right.
And like, we're doing it and we're going to, I guess the one thing I can say is that the band wanted to do Party Like a Rock Star. And I just remember being like, most of us were sober at the time, and it was like, what? Like, bad idea. And then my girlfriend back then mentioned Still Fly, and Still Fly was super popular in high school. Like, I graduated 2007, and that was a song, you know, you heard daily.
Right.
in someone's car or something, you know. So for as embarrassed as we tend to be about Still Fly, it could have been worse, actually.
Dude, that is so nuts. You graduated 2007, and then by like 2008, 2009, I mean, you guys were selling tons of merch and CDs. I mean, that's got to be nuts for you. I mean, I did bands like right out of high school, and I think I, you know, mild success a little bit here and there, you know, early 20s. But I mean, God, I couldn't even imagine right out of high school, boom, you know, the Devil Wears Prada.
We're very lucky. We were about to put together a press pack to send out to record labels towards the end of 2006, early 2007. And Chris, or one of the founding guitar players, just like sort of sent a joke email to Rise Records and said, hey, you should sign us. And they were like, yeah, okay. And we had, it was just the biggest like shot in the dark, like, this is never going to land. And it did. And we started touring that summer of 2006. And two of the members actually wanted Chris and I to drop out of high school so we could start touring sooner. But both him and I wanted to get our diplomas, and we put it off longer. And then, yeah, I know how lucky we were, as far as I know, a lot of people have to, am I going to, you know, go to college? Am I going to throw all this away to try to make it living in a van,
right,
you know, driving around all summer? And for us, it was just super automatic. Like, it was never really a decision from the way I saw it back then.
something that you guys get lumped in the Christian metalcore scene, and kind of especially back then. But the one thing I don't want to talk about the religious side of it. I want to talk about the, did you guys play church basements? You know, that was such a crazy phenomenon to me that, like, I went to see my grandparents one time, and they live out in the country, like in the country. And they're like, oh, a band's playing at the church tonight. And I'm like, what? Like, you know, and it was like, you know, a touring metalcore act that somehow got into my grandparents' church. You know, the youth pastor or something thought it would be cool to bring them in. And I mean, were you guys ever a part of that? You know, did you play your fair share of church basements?
I believe so. I can think of a spot in Lexington, Kentucky. I'm pretty sure we played a church the first time we ever played Nashville. I don't think that will come to any as a surprise to anyone, but right. I don't know. You know, we got lumped in there, and by design, you know, we were brought up, and we're basically just youth group kids, and we wanted to use our platform to, you know, share our beliefs. And things are different now, and have come a long way. But you know, that's like where I went to shows as a kid,
right.
Like when I from 15 to 18 around Dayton, Ohio, like. It's weird how in Ohio it's like basically any local metalcore band was like was probably going to be Christian because like right. just the vast mass like you know population comes from that you know middle class white kids around Ohio you know raised in youth group or the church very different than more progressive areas for sure and. It never seemed that bizarre to me because it was what I was doing around Dayton too.
And you were in an interview talking about you know the only people that kind of gave you crap about being a Christian metalcore band were Christians, and I actually just interviewed Sonny from POD about Satellite's 20th anniversary, and he said the only people that ever gave them crap about being a Christian you know new metal band were the Christians. Like it's pretty crazy. He said they never really got anything about being a Christian; they just got it from Christians. So it's when you said that, I was like, wow, that's exactly what Sonny said.
It's crazy that Satellite's 20 years. I know, I didn't right? know that. That's crazy.
Which means September 11th is about to be 20 years ago too. Like there's an entire right. generation of kids that didn't even, you know, weren't even alive when that happened.
Yeah, that's crazy. Honestly hearing that from Sonny, it comes as not the least bit of a surprise to me. It's a lot of the backwards nature of the Christian faith, unfortunately, that the least open-minded and the least accepting is the ones talking about Jesus, but it's a conversation for another time.
Right, right. Well, as we've got a few minutes left, I wanted to talk to you about a little hockey talk. I know that you've been playing goalie lately. You're a Pens fan, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in Nashville Predators fan, and I was thinking back to the Stanley Cup final that the Pittsburgh beat the Nashville Predators in. But that whole run, and I am surface level hockey fan, like I civic pride, you know, I grew up in Nashville. When my, you know, when the teams there do well, I'm happy. I'm a huge Titans fan. I'll read everything about training camp and who's looking good and the sixth wide receiver that might make the team and all that stuff. So I keep up with the Predators, very surface level, but man, that Stanley Cup final, even though we lost all the way up to that, to those games were some of the most intense times ever. Hockey has that thing of like, and I've always said it like football, it's like, it's always first and goal in hockey. Like you could score at any moment. There might not be a lot of scoring, but you're always like right there on the edge of scoring. And it's some of the most intense sport I've ever seen.
I love it. I grew up loving it. I don't know why. I was born in Pittsburgh and my family's all Pittsburgh. I don't know why my dad gravitated to it so much. I'm a football fan as well, but nothing. I love sports yeah. all around, but nothing comes close to hockey. I played a little bit as a kid and I recently started playing as an adult like 5 years ago-ish. And I play religiously. I was on the ice last night. I usually play anywhere from 3 to 5 times a week. Just picked up goalie turns out it's extremely hard. But it's the speed, the momentum, it's the etiquette, it's the whole culture around it. I love the North. I love Canada generally. And it's just like this group of weird people that creates hockey culture. So it is the best. I've never been to a Preds game. I would love to go. It was a hell of a series, and I know that any Preds fan is not going to want to hear anything from a Pens fan about their team and their city and that cup run, but you have to admit that it did so much for the Nashville organization. It got so many people turned on to it. So you can hate the Pens, but hey, you know.
See, that's where I wasn't going to come in as like a hater, you know, because I'm not as emotionally invested in it as like, you know, like a St. Louis Rams fan, I'm probably going to be mad at because they beat us in the Super Bowl. But, you know, like the Baltimore Ravens just because of the Baltimore Ravens. But like, you know, with the Pittsburgh Penguins, it's like, you know, yeah, it was a good run. I mean, actually, while we were getting ready, I went back and looked at that, you know, the game six where that goal where it just went off of Pecorine's like back and then went in. I'm like, that was like an insane goal at the time. And then the heartbreaker of an empty netter at the end and stuff, man. But, you know, it was fun. It was a fun time. And like I said, you know, just getting that invested in playoff hockey is pretty nuts, because regular season hockey is fun, but man, the playoffs, no matter what team it is, it's just like pins and needles the entire time.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of that way with basketball. Like when the pandemic hit, I couldn't watch, and then basketball came back, I like couldn't care at all. But now with playoff intensity, I'm tuning in pretty regularly, especially with the Milwaukee Bucks doing so well around here. But yeah, the Patrick Hornquist goal off Pekka's back. I was actually in Thessaloniki, Greece at the time. So I was watching on my laptop at like, I think 4 a.m. or something, the time over there. Funny too, because Hornquist was originally a Predator. He actually played AHL here in Milwaukee, now with Florida. But it was a shitty end of the season for my Pens this year. Obviously, Preds and the Canes. Hopefully things more normal in the sports world. I went to a baseball game, the Brewers here against my Pirates. Pirates lost, of course, were terrible, but. My next professional hockey game, I'm going to be like a toddler crying. I'm just going to bawl out of happiness. I can't wait.
Have you ever like went and hung out with hockey players in person in real life? Because I do have a story I want to tell you. So,
no, I haven't. I've gotten to meet, I've never met like an NHLer. I want to hear the story though.
So in 2004, during the lockdown or lockout, Brad Lukovich of the Dallas Stars and the Tampa Bay Lightning, he started a record label. And so some friends of mine were going on tour to go basically showcase for him in Dallas. And they're like, hey, our bass player just quit. We need a bass player. Can you do it? I'm like, sure, I'll do it, whatever. So we go to Dallas and we get there early. And Brad's like, well, just come over to the house. And we're like, okay. And so we go to the house. He's, you know, he won the cup with the Stars. He won the cup with the Lightning, you know, so we're in his house and we're hanging out. He's got Pantera stuff everywhere, you know, gold records. I mean, he's just a giant music fan. And he's like, check these out. And he handed me his Stanley Cup ring. So I got to put on a Stanley Cup ring. I was like, man, this is amazing. You know, and I'm just filling in. So I was just hanging out. So we do the show and whatnot. And then, so he goes back to the Lightning. And this isn't, you know, MySpace we were talking about before we recorded. So MySpace, we're friends on MySpace. I hit him up and I say, hey, I see you're coming to town. Let me know if you need anything when you get into town. Didn't hear anything from him. And then one night I was getting off work and I get a phone call from a random number. And it's Brad. And he's like, hey, man, you know, take us out on the town. I was like, all right. So I drove downtown Nashville, pick up like four of the Lightning in my Jeep Cherokee, go over to a club. And you know, I've been around bands my whole life, you know, been to clubs with bands that, you know, Deftones or somebody like that, going to a bar with the Deftones. Girls don't care nothing. You know, they don't care at all about the girls being there. Dude, when the word got out that hockey players were in the bar, like girls were coming up to me like, hey, can I go talk to him? Can I go talk to him? I mean, it was the most insane thing I've ever seen. They didn't do anything wrong, but I'm just saying like the girls like just freaked out as soon as they knew that they were there. And then, they actually gave us, you know, some tickets to the next day. And they gave us these wristbands, and they're like, I was like, well, what are these for? And they're like, oh, that just means you can go anywhere. I'm like, anywhere, anywhere? And the guy goes, yeah, anywhere, anywhere. So I'm like, all right, well, me and my friend, I'm like, well, let's see where these get us. And we got all the way to the locker rooms, and we didn't go in. I was like, all right, we've gone too far. Let's just leave now. But yeah, man, it was pretty nuts to go and hang out and have a drink with some hockey dudes. And then when the United States and Canada played in the was it the Olympics, maybe? A couple of years, like a year or two later, they were panning Canada's team. And I was like, hey, that's one of the guys that was in my car. Like, you know, it was pretty nuts.
Oh, my God.
I have to find out who that was, man. But that was a crazy time to be around. And then so I got to wear his Stanley Cup rings and then go hang out with him at a bar. It was a wild time.
I'm very jealous. Like, again, I mentioned everything about the game and the etiquette and the culture and it's a special breed, hockey players.
I did like, they were all drinking, and I was like, aren't you guys worried about the game tomorrow? And one of them was like, what do you mean? I'm going to mess up my 10 minutes of ice time, you know? the way he just like made fun of himself, I thought it was a classic line.
Oh, yeah. That's prototypical for sure.
Oh, they were great. But yeah, so playing goalie, man, are you like splits guy? You know, can you do all the good goalie stuff yet, or where are you at?
Nope, I am stiff and not flexible. I took up some exercises as far as being able to open up your hips further and everything that comes with that. But unfortunately, I sold my house and I'm in a temporary apartment now, and all my stuff is basically in storage. So I have my player, my skater gear here, and I do that. But I haven't been able to get out on the ice to try to learn and play goalie any better. But it's insane. It hurts. It hurts. It just, what those guys do as professionals is absolutely insane. And it's fun. I definitely want to get back on the ice and play goalie a little more sometime soon. But it's kicked my ass already.
Seems like a very thankless job being the goalie, because, I mean, you don't really get any offensive chances. Pekka did score a goal, I think, last year. But, you know, you don't get very many opportunities to do anything offensively. And then, you know, you can save 30 shots, but if three go in, you could lose, you know, 3-2. So.
Yeah, I'm not at all a drummer, but, you know, goalies are just like the drummer of hockey.
Right.
And so far, my skills are translating. No, I'm a better goalie than drummer, because I can't do anything as a drummer. But it takes a special person.
It's true. Yeah, they seem to all be nuts, man. It's a thankless job, and I'm assuming the guys you play with, they're just like, thank God we have somebody that wants to play goal.
And that's a part of why I picked it up, is that everyone always needs a goalie. And I'm like, well, I can never get enough ice time.
See, that's why I picked up a bass, because everybody always needs a bass player. Like, I was literally like at the seventh grade lunch table, and all of my friends at the table, like, I'm going to play guitar. And I was like, well, I'm playing bass because you guys need a bass player.
Heard that.
Too much fun, man. So you kind of hinted at some upcoming live stuff. Are you guys, you know, planning to get out again? I know that the you know, concerts are opening back up, so what's the next, I guess, live show?
We have one that's unannounced. We have a festival in Ohio called Incarceration, and then coincidentally we are announcing a tour tomorrow.
Oh, nice. This won't air until Thursday, so no, I mean, I'm being serious. I'm not gonna, you know, ruin your gig for you, so.
No, I mentioned earlier, we got called off the We Came as Romans tour.
Nice.
And then that got rebooked twice, now with a third time. So the tour will happen. It got off to such a great start, and we were getting along so well. And it was slamming. Everyone was coming out. So, again, I'll believe it when I'm actually back on a stage,
right.
But that tour is being announced Tuesday, tomorrow the 22nd. So, if this is coming out Thursday,
right,
Everyone can check it out. I think tickets don't go on sale till Friday, but it'll be nice to do my job again.
Nice. You can start getting hit up for the, hey, man, can I get on the guest list?
Yep.
All that starts right back up, man. Well, Z2 is out now. The Act, I think everybody needs to go check that out too, man. What a great album that is. So you got two great things to tour off of, and in an upcoming tour with We Came as Romans, another great band, another Talk To Me alumni. And Mike, man, thanks for taking some time with me tonight.
Thanks so much for having me, man. And thank you for all your kind words and whatnot. Best of luck to your Titans come fall. But yeah, thanks for having me.
See about Julio Jones, right?
True.
I've been watching too many Julio Jones highlights at training camp, and I'm like, I know I don't know what I'm looking at, and I know this can't, but it looks really good, you know.
He's unreal.
Yeah, he's pretty nuts, man. Well, Mike, man, take care. Appreciate you.
Yeah, man. See you.
Huge thank you to Mike Hranica of the Devil Wears Prada for taking some time. make sure and go check them out on tour with We Came as Romans. Obviously, check out Z2. And like I said in the interview, go back and check out The Act. The Act was an amazing start-to-finish record. I have so much fun listening to it. It is still in the rotation. Make sure to rate, review, subscribe to the podcast. Once again, notfest.com. Become a VIP and come hang out with me tonight, Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern, twitch.tv/notfestofficial. It's free. Come hang out with me, Michael Alago, and SJ from We Are Pigs. Going to be a lot of fun. I will see you tonight. So until next Thursday, I've been Joshua Toomey, and this is the Talk To Me Podcast.
The Talk To Me Podcast, presented by NotFest.com. Follow the show at Talk To Me Talk. Be sure to subscribe, rate the podcast, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app to get the latest from the Talk To Me Podcast.